were Natasha, but Natasha had moved up to support Graves and wasn't part of my squad directly. She hadn't come with us on this trip. I'd felt both good and bad about that. We could sure have used her, but I was glad to spare her from my punishment. My eyes shifted to Carlos. Bio, do you agree with Kiwi on this? He nodded.
We'll save power with the faceplates open except during peak heat. As to toxins, we've yet to identify any in the air. The plants are dangerous, even the ones that don't march around, but we can breathe.
I gave the order. Soon, we were all more comfortable walking with heads bared. Our helmets were new and, in my opinion, superior in design to the previous models. They were no longer solid titanium casings. Instead, they resembled a series of concentric shells. They could be folded up into what looked like a crescent moon when not in use and stowed in our rucks. We stashed them away and breathed clean air.
"Feels good, doesn't it, Vet?" asked Lau.
The rookie had come up to the front of the line to march with me. Feeling a sour frown growing on my face, I struggled to stop that response. I fought an urge to smack the boy down. That's what Harris would have done, but I felt that while many of Harris's behavioral habits represented wisdom on his part, others were born of plain orneriness. I forced a half-smile and nodded to the kid instead.
"Sure does, Lau. Night's coming and the temperature is dropping. I'm drying off sweat that I thought was permanent. It's enough to make you look forward to darkness."
"Vet," Kiwi called. "My buzzers have made contact with someone ahead of us."
I rushed to her position and looked at a tiny screen.
"That's got to be Claver," I said.
"Squad, halt! Everyone shut up!"
Crouching, a few curious heads crowded around. I didn't push them back. They were going to find out what was going on sooner or later.
"Claver?"
Kiwi asked in a hushed voice as she recognized the hiker that her buzzer was tracking. She looked at me.
"Is that what we're doing out here, following Claver?"
"Yes," I said.
"Why didn't you just tell us that, Vet?"
Carlos demanded. I glanced at him.
"Because I didn't want anyone tipping him off."
That statement was partly true, but mostly it was bullshit. Telling them we were following Claver wasn't going to stop their questions. They were going to pile them on now. Sure enough, Carlos and Kiwi were already frowning. I wondered if I'd somehow spawned two more James McGills, underlings that questioned everything you did.
"McGill,"
Carlos asked in a whisper,
"why are we following Claver? Why not just arrest him, or better yet, shoot his ass?"
"The brass thinks he might lead us to something. We'll follow him and keep out of sight. Just have one buzzer on his tail at a time, Kiwi, at a safe distance."
"Got it. He's moving again, about 2 kilometers ahead of our position. We should veer about 20 degrees west."
We followed Kiwi's directions, and eventually the sun went down. Claver kept on walking. So we did the same. Along about midnight, when my soldiers were beginning to complain about the long march, Claver finally stopped and made camp. I noted with interest that he didn't light a fire or pitch a tent. He didn't even cut down a fern to make a bed. Instead, he crawled into the ferns and wove the leaves together, making a sort of nest around himself.
"That's weird,"
Kiwi said, watching on her tapper while chewing her rations.
"Why do you think he's doing that?"
I said. "I think he's going to great pains not to tear up the ferns. Maybe he knows something we don't know."
"Yeah," Carlos said, laughing. "I think he's some kind of eco-freak. I hate these ferns. They never stop lashing me in the face."
So saying, he unleashed a force blade, extending it from the forearm of his suit. With a single deft motion, he slashed down a big branch from the nearest fern. The smell of burnt plant material tingled in our noses.
"Damn it, Carlos," I said. "Don't mess with the plants unless I give you an order to do so. Got that?"
"Sure, Vet," he said, organizing his kill into a bed of sorts. "But do you mind telling me why not?"
I walked over and hauled him to his feet.
"Because," I said angrily into his surprised face, "they might not like it."
He gave a nervous laugh, which I ignored. I released him and walked away.
You mean they might grow pods or something?
He asked. I doubt that. The pods came from the big trees, not these ferns. I sat on a root the size of a truck and looked at him. Keevy began to explain before I could.
Look, Keevy said. McGill's right. We don't know this world. What we do know is that these plants have complex defense mechanisms. They might do anything, grow a pod, whatever.
But this is just a fern, right?
Yes, but remember that according to galactic records, nothing lived here a few centuries ago. The ferns and the trees, they don't belong here. They've been transplanted, seeded here. I don't trust anything that grows here.
Carlos studied the fern branch he'd bedded down on with concern. Finally, he got up and dragged it away. Then he came back and lay on the dirt.
This is bullshit, he complained. I bet Claver knows about the buzzer. I bet he's just screwing with us on purpose.
Maybe, I said. Why don't you test your theory? Chop up a few plants, make a log cabin out of them. If you're fine in the morning, we'll all know it's safe.
Just like the rockfish back on Dust World, huh? No thanks, vet.
I chuckled, set up a watch order, and fell asleep. When I was awakened, it was by a panicked Keevy. She was shaking me, talking rapidly. Behind her head, the sun filtered through the thick canopy of green growths. The light was gloomy, but it was clearly morning.
McGill, wake up!
What's wrong, girl?
I asked, heaving myself up and clawing at my rifle. She put a hand on my arm.
No, you can't shoot your way out of this one.
Frowning, I turned back to her. She looked at me suspiciously, worriedly. Glancing around the camp, I noticed I was the only person she'd awakened. It was dawn, and most of my troops were still sleeping. It was her watch, the last one of the night. The nights were short here on Death World, as were the days. The planet's rotational period was only about 20 hours long.
What's wrong?
I repeated. She brought her tapper up to my face. I looked, and then I knew. On screen, the lifter was departing. The feed was live. The ship was taking off right now, leaving us behind.
I didn't order you to leave a buzzer back at camp, I said.
You didn't order me not to, either.
She had me there. I looked into her brown eyes. They were angry, scared, and a little bewildered. I felt a bit bad.
Sorry, I said.
She punched me then. I didn't have a helmet on, and although I twisted my head to one side, she caught me with the knuckles of her gauntlet. Blood dribbled down from my ear, but I didn't strike her back. I didn't have the heart.
I knew it, she said.
Then she proceeded to go into a marching, kicking fury. Curses and leaves floated around the glade until the others woke up.
What the hell? Carlos demanded. Then he looked at me. Hey, you two didn't sleep together last night, did you?
Keevy threw him an angry snarl.
No, we didn't, and that's never happening again. McGill didn't screw me this time. He screwed all of us.
To understand my squad's behavior, you have to understand our culture and lifestyle. As a team of interstellar troops, we weren't quite like the professional armies of the past. Oh yeah, we were good soldiers, don't get me wrong. We could fight better than most humans ever could since we kept dying and coming back young and strong. We had more combat experience than our counterparts in days gone by. But we had a different flavor to our social interactions, too. Sex among soldiers wasn't frowned upon as long as it was consensual and both parties were relatively close in rank. Keevy and I had, for example, been intimate on a number of occasions over the years. More recently, Carlos and Keevy had maintained an affair that had lasted throughout our campaign back on Machine World. It seemed to have died out on Death World, I realize now. I hadn't seen them together for weeks. That was par for the course, unfortunately. Our personal relationships tended to die after a while. The worst part was the lingering feelings afterward. In some ways, these ghosts contributed to a breakdown of discipline, but they seemed to be unavoidable. When you placed both sexes in tight quarters for decades, it was only natural and inevitable that love affairs would come and go. In effect, we acted like old married couples sometimes. We were friends, we were war buddies, we lived, screwed, and died together. At other times, we got on each other's nerves so badly we drove one another to the point of murder. I threw up my hands, eyeing my squad. They were all standing now, looking at me for direction, for answers.
Okay, I said. Let's put this on the table. We've been assigned to Tail Claver. He's headed out into the bush, exiled by the brass as part of a deal he cut. The reason he was released is because he claims to have had dealings with these plant aliens. He can supposedly talk to them. He understands them. It's our mission to discover how he does this and to learn what these aliens are up to.
A deep patrol? Kiwi demanded. That's what you called it? It's a death warrant.
Hold on, Carlos said, bemused. Okay, so the assignment sucks, Kiwi. Why are we all going to die?
Because, you idiot, she said. McGill is lying. The lifter has taken off. We've been abandoned, just like Claver. I've tried to contact the crew. Nothing. My ID has been blocked. Me, a tech, blocked. We're all blocked.
What?
Carlos asked, his voice cracking on a high note. He checked his tapper, then fell back onto the ground again, staring up at the green canopy overhead.
The lifter took off? He asked from the ground. We're screwed. We're totally screwed. Oh, God, why did I join this shit legion? I don't believe this.
I ignored Carlos, who was prone to dramatic displays. I frowned at Kiwi instead.
We're blocked? No net traffic?
Nothing.
Huh, I said thoughtfully, poking at my tapper. It appeared she was right. How are we supposed to report in our findings? Kiwi came at me then, and I really thought she was going to punch me again. I flinched a little, but she just stood close and stared up at me, eyes blazing.
Because, you big idiot, they've rigged us. Maybe Winslet took over again, and he's getting revenge. Or maybe he revived Turov to trump Drusus. And she decided to screw us. Does it matter? We've got nothing. We're on this rock in a forest full of hostile monsters, and we can't even eat them.
These plants are poisonous, huh? I asked.
Very.
Nodding, I heaved a sigh. Kiwi had a pretty ironclad case against me. Right about then, Carlos kicked up his act a few notches. He took out his sidearm and pressed it under his chin. Still lying on the forest floor, he gazed up at the giant trees without blinking. I walked over to him and loomed in his field of vision. That's a violation, specialist, I said.
I don't care, McGill. You never cared about the rules. Why the hell should I?
Come on, Carlos, don't off yourself here. That's bullshit.
I'm doing it. If you want to get eaten and shit out by one of these monsters, you go right ahead. I already did that, and once was good enough for me.
Having known Carlos since the day we both signed up together, I knew he was serious. He was about to do it. Normally, Carlos was all fun and games, but today he just didn't feel like laughing. I didn't blame him. I felt a pang of sympathy for him, but I didn't let it show. Killing yourself to get out of duty in Legion Varus, that was unacceptable. Sure, if you were badly injured and a burden to your unit, you could get away with it. But blowing your brains out because you didn't like your assignment? No way.
I can't guarantee you'll be revived, I said. I know that. We're blocked. We're all as good as permed anyway.
Thinking about levers I could use to motivate him, I could only come up with one thing.
Okay then, specialist, I said. If you discharge that weapon, I'll pull your stripes.
Carlos's eyes rolled to look up at me.
That's bullshit, McGill. I worked hard to get specialist.
This tantrum you're throwing is bullshit, I roared, doing my best imitation of Harris.
I'll have your stripes, I swear. Now get on your feet, holster that weapon, and march, soldier.
Carlos growled with frustration. He scrambled up, cursing, and put away his gun. He didn't want to look at me after that. Neither did Kiwi.
Nothing like a fine morning in Legion Varus, I shouted, clapping Lau on the back.
The kid looked as green as a pod monster. He'd only died once in combat so far, and I could tell this wild behavior by his non-coms was freaking him out. I gave him a hearty laugh and took point. We marched after Claver, who, according to Kiwi, had been up an hour ago and moved on. Chapter 25. We'd only marched about a kilometer further when we ran into something odd. We were up on a ridge, a rise in the land created by a massive root. Consequently, we could see a few kilometers across the forest floor. Up ahead were more ferns, but unlike the other ferns, these were moving, rippling like a field of wheat. Now you have to understand, these ferns weren't your standard-issue Boston ferns you'd find back on Earth. No, these things were like trees in their own right. Their fronds were like palm fronds, only bigger. They swayed and gyrated in a pattern, like they were doing a line dance.
"Is there wind up ahead?" Carlos asked.
"Nope," I said.
"See the foliage on the tree above the ferns? Nothing's moving." "It's got to be a podwalker," Kiwi said. "I'll send a buzzer down there to see."
"Everybody take a knee and keep quiet," I ordered. "Kiwi, send in a bug to check out the ferns, and give me an update on Claver. What's he doing?"
"Nothing special," she said. "I've been watching him. He's pretty far ahead now, and he's moving faster than before."
"Is he past that strange zone among the ferns?"
"Yes, he's way beyond that. He's on the other side of the next big tree trunk on the right."
Normally, being one tree trunk ahead of my squad would have meant a man was right in our face. But the scale of this place, it was amazing. Some of the trees were effectively the size of small mountains, and Claver was on the other side of the next one in line ahead of us. One of Kiwi's buzzers leapt from her arm and vanished into the ferns. I watched as it flew, thinking that its carefully designed camouflage technology was wasted on this world. It had been built and programmed to behave like an insect, but there weren't really any insects on Death World, at least none that we discovered thus far. There was no way anyone would mistake a buzzer for anything than what it was on this planet. I moved to Kiwi and watched her tap her. She was flipping back and forth between the streaming video of Claver and the buzzer gliding toward the restless ferns.
"How do you keep that thing from running into all those ferns?"
"I don't," Kiwi said. "It's on automatic. The AI is quite good when it comes to navigation and evasion."
"You're in the windy zone now, aren't you?" She nodded. The ferns on the vid feed were in motion, rustling and shivering. From a distance, the effect had resembled a windstorm, but up close you could tell it wasn't wind. The ferns weren't moving in the right pattern. They were shivering and thrashing, as if someone was shaking them.
"That's really weird," I said. "What's going on? A localized earthquake?"
Kiwi looked up at me.
"Maybe. Or maybe the tree the ferns are growing near is shaking."
That was a thought. I stood up, dug out a scope, and stared into the distance. I wanted a close-up of the massive thing we were calling a tree.
"If it's moving, I can't see it," I said.
"The branches and foliage are still as a grave."
"What about the roots?"
"Send the buzzer up that way. I can't see the roots through the ferns."
"Vet," Carlos asked, "are we done here? Don't you think we should start marching again?"
I gave him a glance. "You want to take point? You got it." Grumbling, he started down the side of the hill. Kiwi stood and followed, stumbling over every obstacle. She was watching the feed from her buzzers as much as she was watching her feet. That was an occupational hazard for Tex, I guess.
"Hold it,"
she said after another dozen steps.
"I found something, McGill."
Frowning, I walked up to her and waved for the others to halt. She showed me the feed. At first, I really didn't know what I was looking at. It appeared to be a brownish surface, scored with orange-white streaks. The streaks were oozing some kind of fluid.
"What's this?"
"It's a root. An exposed root on the surface. Those slashes. I think Claver cut them before he left the area."
I could see what she was talking about now. Slices had been taken out of the base of one of the tree roots. Big cuts, a meter long and at least 2 centimeters wide. "Do you think he did that to trigger the defensive instincts of the plant?" Kiwi nodded.
"It stands to reason, and that means he must know we're following."
"How would he know that?"
"My buzzers, probably," she admitted. They make noise, a distinctive sound that doesn't naturally occur on this planet. I'm sorry. I tried to keep him from knowing I was tailing him.
It's all right. You were following orders. I waved the squad forward, but Carlos hesitated on point.
Hold on, Vet, he said. Shouldn't we go around? I mean, if we avoid this region entirely, nothing bad can happen, right?
Maybe, maybe not, I said. We don't know how long the defensive growths take to form. We can assume that the first pod grew because of the broadside attacks, or maybe it was the burning exhaust of our lifter when we landed. In any case, the enemy can't generate a pod instantly. Claver is already losing us, and I don't want him to get farther away.
Yeah, but just to be safe,
I frowned at Carlos. Chicken? Now? You were trying to off yourself just a few hours ago.
I'm only thinking about the rest of my squad. I'm the medic here. You don't have another. Normally bio people don't take point.
He was absolutely right about the role of a squad medic. I'd put him on point because I was tired of his crap from earlier on. Taking in a breath, I tried to think tactically. Getting our medic killed out of spite didn't seem like the wisest move. All right, who volunteers? Everyone slid their eyes from one to the next. The experienced troops, they kept their mouths shut.
I'll do it,
Lau said, stepping forward. That's the spirit, I said, giving him a nod. Take point, Lau. We marched on, right into the zone with the shivering plants. It was weird being in their midst. Whatever had them moving, I couldn't feel it. There wasn't an earthquake under my boots, localized or otherwise. There wasn't any wind, either. What else could make a plant move like that on its own? Carlos, I said, did you see any of those nanofibers inside the fern plant you cut down last night?
You mean that corn silk stuff? The strings Natasha said were muscles?
Yes, he thought about it.
My cut was clean. The force blade burned the plant. I suppose there could have been a few strands hanging from the end. I'm not sure, really. I didn't inspect it or anything.
Roger that. Well, let's pick up the pace, people. We began to trot rapidly through the ferns. I was getting a bad feeling. One thing they'd taught us in training was to listen to feelings like that and act on them. We hadn't gone 100 meters before Kiwi shouted to get our attention. I veered to her position, rifle at the ready. She was standing in an open area where a huge root loomed. I jogged up and looked at the spot she was examining. Cut, orange-white lines were bleeding sap.
Claver did this, I said.
He sure did. Notice the cuts? They spell something, but it's hard to make out.
Frowning, I eyed them carefully, then I busted out laughing. The cuts were long and tall, and they formed the dripping letters of my name, McGill.
I don't think it's funny at all, Carlos complained. He knows we're after him. What's more, he knows who is after him. That's bullshit. Someone must have tipped him off, and I'm not talking about your nosy buzzer, Kiwi.
That idea made some sense, and it stopped my laughter. Well, I said, if he knows we're coming, he probably won't lead us anywhere good. We might as well catch up with him and end this. Carlos lit up with a smile on his face.
You mean,
he said, making a slashing gesture across his throat. If it comes to that, but I hope it doesn't, that's not our mission. We're to gather intel, not execute him. We could have done that back at camp.
We should have. Claver is just toying with us.
This is a wild goose chase, I admitted, and Claver is the craziest goose in this forest. We pressed on, but Kiwi stopped us about 10 minutes later. What's going on now? I demanded.
He stopped. He's at the next tree. Notice the one with the split trunk. He's in there, underneath it.
What do you mean, underneath it?
There's a natural dip in the ground, right there, see? A bowl surrounded by roots and roofed by the tree itself. It's like a cave, a big one.
What the hell is he doing in there? I demanded, looking at a video feed. I saw for myself that Claver was sitting with his legs crossed and his eyes closed. He had the look of some kind of meditating monk.
I don't know, she said.
Maybe he's trying to talk to the aliens.
We were past the zone of moving ferns now, just barely. That made me a little more confident. After all, nothing had jumped us yet. If the megaflora was generating a defensive growth, it apparently took a while. I'd been looking for pods on the trunk, but I hadn't seen any yet. "We'll hold here, then," I said at last. "We'll watch him and see what he does. This is exactly the kind of thing we were ordered to observe and report on."
"McGill," Carlos said, "I'm just going to say one thing."
"Promise?" He waved my words away.
"Look, if he knows we're here, and he knows we're watching him, why the hell would he stop and start some kind of seance with the plants?"
"I don't know," I said, "but I hope to find out. We'll watch him for an hour, that's all." The hour passed while my people milled around and pissed and watched the landscape nervously. They reminded me of a pack of nervous house cats, but I couldn't fault them. This world was a weird one, even by my standards. At last I stood up.
"Time's up," I said. "Let's go get him."
Lau scrambled to his feet, anxious to take point again. I led him, and I found myself liking the kid more all the time. Unfortunately, this wasn't his lucky day. He fell to the ground, not a dozen paces ahead of our position, grasping at his throat. He convulsed a few times before relaxing. He looked dead to me, and I've seen a lot of dead folks.
"Squad, halt!" I shouted. "Nobody move!"
We all froze, looking around and panting.
"We should burn these plants," Carlos said. "Burn them all to the ground."
"Good idea," I said. "But right now we've got troubles."
"What killed him, specialist?"
Kivi demanded, looking at Carlos.
"You're asking me?" he demanded. "How the hell would I know? He's too far away to examine."
"Then go examine him,"
Kivi suggested between clenched teeth.
"No," I said. "Nobody move. Kivi, send a buzzer down there and check the corpse. Pipe the feed to our tappers."
She did as I asked, cursing and fumbling with her equipment. A tiny drone flexed its wings and flew to Lau. It landed on his collar and examined his face. The magnified close-up on my tapper was disturbing. Staring eyes, protruding tongue. He was as dead as yesterday.
"I don't know," Carlos said. "There's a little foam, and his tongue is out. I think it was respiratory, but I'm only guessing. Gas, maybe."
"Helmets on!" I shouted, and everyone hastened to obey.
They unshelled their helmets and secured them as quickly as they could, but it wasn't quite fast enough. Gorman fell to his knees nearby. He was the closest one to Lau, the second man in line.
"Gas!"
he managed to get out before he pitched onto his face and died. The rest of us engaged our filtering systems, then shut out the atmosphere entirely.
"It's got to be a nerve agent to work so quickly," Carlos said. "Something heavy, something we can't see. Notice the two victims are farther down slope than the rest of us."
Sargon came up close to me while I studied the dead man, wondering what to do. His belcher was banging on his shoulder, and his expression was grim.
"Vet, maybe we should start burning these ferns, any of the ones that are moving around."
"Not a bad idea," I lied. "But I think we should leave them alone. I think Claver cut that root to trigger them to release gas. That's a biological defensive system. If we burn the ferns, God only knows what will happen next." Sargon shrugged.
"I don't like this. I prefer a stand-up fight."
Knowing just how he felt, I nodded thoughtfully. "We've got to get out of here. We'll circle around to the north by walking up that ridge."
"That's a route, Vet, not a ridge," Carlos pointed out.
"I know that. Every rise of the land in this region is a route." We hustled up the route. I took point, not having the heart to order another to do it. On my tapper, I marked the spot and declared Lau and Gorman dead. As our tappers weren't hooked to any wider area network than our own local squad command channel, it didn't mean much. But if someone found us later on, at least the deaths would be confirmed and they would be cleared for revival. It was a long shot, but I felt I wanted to play this little adventure by the book from now on.
"Claver's gone,"
Kivi said when we'd climbed upward 100 meters or so.
"What do you mean, gone?" I demanded.
She looked at me guiltily.
I've replayed the vid file. The space under the tree was confined, and the buzzer, well, it's programmed to get closer to targets if they're sleeping or at least holding still. Claver nailed it. I guess that's what he was really doing, luring in the AI on my buzzer.
Well, then send another one after him, I shouted.
I did.
Where is he?
So far, no contact. He's fled the region. I've got the drone on a spiraling search pattern, going out from the tree in widening circles.
I know what a frigging spiral is, I growled. Shit! What made me the maddest was that we'd been outsmarted by Claver. He was a slippery man, probably the slipperiest I'd ever encountered. He'd been playing with us from the beginning, setting traps and seeking to lose our pursuit. Right then and there, on the graves of Lau and Gorman, I vowed to catch the man. We might all be as good as permed on this poisonous death trap of a planet, but I was going to get Claver before this was over. Chapter 26. We pressed ahead, traveling in the direction we hoped Claver had gone. Soon we came into a region full of a new variety of plant. We'd never seen the like of it before. Instead of ferns and massive trees, there were vines here, vines with heavy pods hanging from them. The pods dragged on the ground like ripe fruit. Now, when I say there were vines, a person might mistakenly envision a sweet little beanstalk, something a few meters high with bright green leaves. That's not the kind of vine I'm talking about. First off, the leaves were crackling and brown, as if they were dying. They were much bigger than any vine back on Earth, about 10 meters high on average. The pods hanging from these vines were a dark, waxy green, sort of like cucumbers, gargantuan cucumbers, the size of SUVs, that lay on the bare earth, growing fat and shiny. "Don't touch any of these things," I ordered. My squad didn't need much encouragement in that department. They warily avoided contact with the scary-looking vegetation as we walked into the garden. My admonishment turned out to be a good idea. There were spines on the pods, we learned as we got in among them. Red, hair-thin spines that glistened with some kind of clear liquid.
"I think we should roast this whole field," Sargon said. "We've got some grenades and incendiary agents. If we light them up, they might all burn."
"Might be a good idea," I admitted. "But then again, they might all hatch and eat us instead."
"I've got him," Kiwi said suddenly. "I've picked up Claver again."
I trotted gingerly around a few spiny cucumbers to her position. "Show me." She did, and I experienced my first grim smile of the day. Claver was in the center of this vast field we were attempting to cross. He was at a central nodule, a nexus point, where all these vines came together. He was walking around the spot, examining it carefully.
"What do you think he's looking for?" I asked Kiwi.
"I've got no idea," she admitted.
Thinking hard for a second, I turned back to Sargon. "We're going to try your idea."
"Great,"
he said, clapping his gauntlets together and digging in his pack. "I'll set them up on a timer. Everyone give me all the phosphorus you've got, grenades too. We'll retreat to the edge of the field long before..." "No," I said.
"No what?"
"We're not retreating. We're advancing. Set up the firebomb behind us. We'll head for Claver's position."
"Are you sure about that, Vet?"
Sargon asked.
"You might burn us all alive. See these brown leaves? Notice the high oxygen levels? This will burn hot. Hell, even the breeze is heading toward the center of the field."
"I know all that. We'll move fast, and if Claver hides or doubles back on us again, there will be a fire right behind us. He can't escape. He's not getting away again. If we don't get him, the fire will." No one looked happy with my plan. Kiwi walked up and put a hand on mine.
"James," she said, "that's not what we were ordered to do. We were ordered to follow Claver and find out what he's up to."
"Oh, yeah? Well, let me clue you in. That's never going to work. He knows we're after him, and he's not going to lead us anywhere but to our deaths. He'll just keep setting up traps for us.
How do you know that, McGill? Carlos demanded.
Because I've dealt with this man on 3 planets. You don't just let Claver loose and expect him to do what you want. That's never going to happen. Drusus doesn't understand what we are dealing with.
What do you think he's really up to out here?
Kiwi asked, watching her tapper again. Honestly? I asked. I'm not sure. But I am certain it involves getting all of us killed. If we keep following him blindly, he'll figure out a way to do it. Only at that point, if he feels like it, will he go and talk to his plant friends? They looked scared and uncertain, but no one openly argued with me. Okay, I continued. Build your bomb and set it up, Sargon. The rest of you spread out and advance, but try not to touch the spines. Armor or not, I don't like the look of them. 10 minutes later, we were advancing in a line, trotting through the vines. Behind us, a short fuse was ticking. Sargon had tried to set it for 30 minutes, defeating my entire plan. Fortunately, I'd checked his work and reset it to 90 seconds. That got the squad moving. A blast of heat and light loomed behind us before we'd gone 100 meters. Maybe I'd said it wrong, or maybe 1.5 minutes just wasn't all that long under these circumstances. We couldn't move quickly enough through this field, picking our way from plant to plant. "Show me Claver," I ordered when I levered myself back up off the ground. Burning bits of vegetation were raining down on us. That part made me happy. I hated these plants. Kiwi piped in a view of Claver. He was no longer toying with the central nexus of the vine plant. He was up and rushing around looking for something. Then, suddenly, he loomed close to the camera position. I got it then. He was looking for the drone. He came up to our faces, snarling.
"You dumbasses," he shouted at the camera. "You just killed us all."
I felt a chill run through my bones despite the steamy heat of the planet. I could tell he meant what he was saying. He went to smash the buzzer, but he missed. The drone went straight upward as Kiwi was driving it higher on full power. I heard a distant popping sound. Was Claver shooting at it? "Do you still have him?" I asked Kiwi.
"I think so. He found that buzzer like a pro. But he hid it among the spines on a pod. I bet he might have caught a few of them when he tried to smash it."
"Serves him right," I said. Looking over my shoulder, I saw the flames were licking the dry fields eagerly. "Let's pick up the pace," I ordered, and we charged deeper toward the center. Now and then I was forced to slash a vine or stomp right over a pod in my metal boots. That wasn't as dangerous as it sounded, as we were wearing armor. But what I didn't like about it was any possible effect it might have on the pods themselves. So far, they hadn't displayed any form of defensive capability. But that was far from conclusive, as we'd only just started damaging them directly. When the pods finally did react, it was in a big way. The pods didn't like getting burned, apparently. When the flame reached them, they woke up, or whatever was growing inside them did. Creatures loomed out of those waxy oblong cocoons. They were instantly wreathed in flame and therefore difficult to identify. Blinded by fire, the large, squatty creatures clawed and staggered as if they were sleeping animals rudely awakened into an inferno. Standing around 5 meters tall, their alien bodies weren't shaped like men at all. They were more like spiders, multi-legged monsters with spiny hair that burned merrily as they died.
"Holy shit," Carlos breathed. "Did you see those things, McGill? Are all these pods ripening with monsters like that?"
"I would expect so," I said. "Keep moving before the ones around us get the word." My orders came too late. The message seemed to have been telegraphed up the burning vines to all the pods we were marching past. One broke free to my right, making a squelching sound like a man shoving a foot into a wet rubber boot. It was right in the middle of my squad, and we couldn't go around without getting closer to the advancing flames. This spider wasn't on fire yet, so I could see it clearly. It had the same orange fronds, the same kind of sensory organs that I had seen on the creatures born of the trees. The fronds were immediately alert. They scanned and spotted us quickly. "Cut it down!" I shouted, and we opened up with our morph rifles. Most of us had our weapons set up for close assault mode, and we lashed the monster with fire, but it didn't go down easily. Taking two staggering steps into a storm of bullets, the thing flipped over, thrashing. It got back up, but we blasted it back down again. We had too much firepower pouring into its body for it to struggle up a third time. It was still heaving and steaming when we marched right over it.
"I gotta hand it to you, McGill," Carlos said. "No one I've ever served under could come up with a better way to get his squad killed."
"Shut up. We're not dead yet." Miraculously, Carlos did shut up. Maybe he was saving his breath to run. We had to kill three more spiders before we reached the Nexus. The last two came on together, converging on us from both sides. Sargon caught one with his belcher, nailing it right in the belly. The weaponeer had been knocked flat and was lying on his back at the time, aiming up into its guts. But still, it was a beautiful shot. The thing gushed out thick, hot liquids and died. The last spider also got in close, too close for rifle fire. We hacked it apart with force blades. It was nasty work, and we lost another trooper, but we won past it. Behind us, our squad's pig wasn't so lucky. All this time, our ox-sized drone had been trotting dutifully in our wake like a faithful pet, but the vines were a problem for its navigational software. The doomed thing hadn't been able to keep up. One of the spider beasts came out of the burning perimeter and charged close, sensing the drone somehow, despite the fact the spider was on fire itself. Maybe the drone's heavy, vibrating tread had given it away. Whatever the case, the spider jumped on the supply drone's back and rode it down to earth. Tearing at it and ripping sacks of supplies off, the spider began making a kind of shrieking sound. Maybe it was happy to get a little revenge, I don't know.
"Shit!" Carlos called out. "Oh, shit! We have to go back! That thing has all our gear, our food!"
"Be my guest, specialist," I said.
"Damn it, McGill, I'm not going to be a taste tester again if we get out of here. You can just forget about that."
"Wouldn't dream of asking," I said. "That's Keevy's job." Keevy hadn't been listening to our radio chatter, but she heard her name mentioned.
"Keep them moving, McGill," she said. "We're almost there. The center of this garden is dead ahead."
We broke through the twisting field of vines and came out into the open. Instead of being like curtains in our way, the vines were now strung up high, like power wires hanging from pylons. There we found a squat, central mass. It was in the center of about 100 vines, each of which radiated out to a long line of pods. The big central nexus reminded me immediately of those barrel-like cacti they had in Earth's deserts. Round, but not a sphere, it stood tall and was almost as thick around as it was high. More striking than its girth, however, was its vast collection of spines. While watching Claver poke around this thing on video, it hadn't looked like much. But now that we were up close, I could see the spines were each the size of a sword. They were more than a meter long and tapered to a perfect point. The core of the plant wasn't anything a man could mess with easily.
"What do we do now?" Carlos demanded. "I don't see Claver."
"You want me to blast that thing, vet?"
Sargon demanded. "No, hold on. Circle around and look for Claver. Keevy, did you see where he went?"
"My buzzer is still searching the area. He has to be here. But I don't have him on my vidstream right now. The smoke..."
The smoke was getting heavy. We'd outrun the fire, but it hadn't burnt out. I had the feeling it was going to consume the entirety of this spider-growing patch before it was through. The surrounding undergrowth of the forest itself was a lot wetter and probably wouldn't burn, but this dry patch was toast. We spread out and looked all around the glade. Claver had vanished. The smoke got thicker, and I was getting desperate.
"Damn it!"
I shouted a minute or so later.
"He must have given us the slip again. I can't believe it!"
"Vet?" Sargon called. I glanced over at him. He aimed his belcher at the central nexus meaningfully.
"I guess you might as well blast it," I said. "We'll destroy this thing and then move out of the patch on the far side before the fire gets here."
Sargon sighted and cranked his aperture to a narrow beam. He planned to punch holes in it, I could tell, and I approved.
"Stop!" roared a voice.
We all spun around and stared. Claver stood up right in our midst. He'd been buried, I guess, under our feet. The big cactus thing had gripped our attention, and we'd walked right over him in our haste to enter the center of the field. Dirt dripped from him, and his face was lit with a gleam that I might have mistaken for madness. But I knew Claver. He always had an angle. Chapter 27 Claver walked up to me like he hadn't a care about what I might do to him. A wall of fire was 100 meters behind him. A throng of dying, burning, screeching spiders was out there, too, in the fields all around us. On top of all that, he had 12 rifles aimed at his chest. Any one of us could have cut him down with the twitch of a finger, but he didn't care. He approached me with an angry air like he was an officer who just found the dumbest recruit in the Legion and planned on giving the boy a thrashing.
"You," he breathed, staring into my faceplate. "I should have known. No one else could have screwed this up so thoroughly. What's wrong with your brain, son?"
"They say it's genetic," I said. "But I don't believe them. My parents were more or less normal."
"Listen," Claver said. "We don't have much time. You've caught me. That's what you wanted, right? Just leave the Nexus alone and we'll move out. We can still make it out of here."
I glanced over my shoulder at the massive barrel-like plant. "What's so special about this giant cactus?" I asked.
"That's one of them. One of the megaflora."
"I thought the trees were the megaflora." He shook his head.
"We don't have time for this."
I reached out with my rifle barrel and tapped him meaningfully on the chest. "We have enough time for a few more answers. We can outrun these spider things. They only wake up when they get lit on fire." Claver's eyes rolled up in his head. It was an expression of disbelief and exasperation. I'd seen it countless times before, but usually on the faces of women I'd dated.
"I don't even know what they'll do. This is unprecedented," he said.
"In that case, you'd better start making sense," I said. "Sargon over there has an itchy trigger finger. Since you seem to care more about the cactus than you do your own life, you should probably talk faster." Claver's eyes went to Sargon, then back to me.
"All right. I didn't think you'd go this far. I guess I'd forgotten that Legion Varus is the scourge of the known galaxy."
"That's us."
"Can we at least start walking out of here?" he asked.
I considered. "All right. Squad, move out. Walking pace." Claver clearly wanted to move faster. He began to trot every 12 steps, but I reached out and yanked him back to a walking pace. I figured it was an incentive to get his facts straight.
"Okay," Claver said. "This is big, McGill. Bigger than a patch of alien spiders. You've done a lot of damage out here. But we still might be able to convince them that you didn't know who you were dealing with. We might be able to get out of this alive."
I shrugged. "I've died before."
"No, I'm not talking about individual deaths. I'm talking about the death of our species, not just you and your squad. You see, this Nexus isn't just operating a few spiders and spiny plants. This is a brain. A central node in a vast nervous system that covers most of this planet."
I frowned at him, not entirely understanding. "A brain?" I asked. "Since when do plants have brains?"
"These creatures are cellulose, mostly, and some of their forms do use photosynthesis, but they aren't plants, as in our classic definition. They don't just sit around and soak up sun all day. They can move, and they can think."
"Okay," I said. "I'll buy that after what I've seen them do."
"Right. They coordinate. They organize. They can build things, too, if they want to."
Like spaceships? I asked.
Yes, even that, he said. But that's not what you have here. This is a brain node. Think of it that way. The central node has been spawning smaller directive creatures to handle others. Think of them as shepherds that herd flocks of dumber plants.
You're talking about the spiders, right?
Yes, exactly.
Why didn't you tell us all this back at the damned lifter? I demanded. This information would have been more useful at that point.
Claver laughed. I told that fool Drusus just enough to get thrown out of his camp. Why would I tell him more? He didn't pay for more.
Then why are you telling me?
Because the situation has changed, and you're screwing up my plans. If you destroy a nexus, well, God help us all.
Frowning, I kept walking with him. The fire behind us reached the edge of the central nexus. A few more spiders were caught up in the flame and died horribly.
Carlos said, walking up to us. I don't want to interrupt you two lovebirds, but that nexus thing is about to get roasted.
Nah, Claver said. It'll be okay. The vine's already ripened on this field, see, and it's stopped distributing water to the pods. That's done to trigger the spiders to hatch.
What the hell are you talking about? Carlos demanded suspiciously.
Claver shook his head and spoke carefully as if Carlos was a slow child. I knew the feeling.
That big central thing you call a cactus, it's full of water, and that means it's too green to burn. Nothing right around it will burn either.
Thinking back, I had noted a large barren area without pods growing in it around the plant. Maybe Claver was right. Okay, keep talking, I said. My inclination is to turn around and blast that cactus to fragments. Tell me why I shouldn't do it.
You can't do that, Claver said. Seriously, McGill, I know you're a man of limited intellect, but that doesn't mean you're completely incapable of logical thought.
Thanks, I said, narrowing my eyes at him. Let's give my substandard brain a workout, shall we? You said these plant aliens like to seed forgotten star systems such as this one. You described them as rebels in the cephalopod kingdom. Was that story bullshit, too?
Not entirely. They do live among the cephalopods, but I did withhold one critical piece of information about their conflict.
What's that? I demanded.
The cephalopods are losing their war with these creatures. These plants are winning. That's why I don't want to offhandedly kill one of their brains. They don't have billions of brains among them, only a few. Are you capable of comprehending the distinction?
I wanted to punch Claver. Hell, I wanted to shoot him dead. He'd set traps for us, insulted us, and he'd gotten Earth into God knew what kind of danger. With a growl in my throat, I turned to Sargon. Weaponeer, I called out.
Vet?
You see that cactus-looking thing behind us? There's a lot of smoke, but it's a big target.
I see it,
Sargon said, squinting and putting his belcher up to his shoulder.
Hey,
Claver said, reaching for Sargon. Sargon, wearing powered armor, batted him away easily since Claver was in a light smartcloth suit.
Take aim and punch a hole into that cactus for me, Weaponeer, I said. I want to see what a plant brain looks like on the inside.
With pleasure, Veteran McGill.
Chapter 28 The belcher hummed in the air and crackled for an instant. A bolt of energy leapt from Sargon's weapon to the big Nexus brain. An uneven hole opened with a puff of what looked like steam. Liquid poured out. Claver had said it was full of water, but the stuff that came out was more of a thick, discolored goop.
There you go, Vet, Sargon said. One plant brain cooked to perfection.
Excellent. Claver fell to his knees. I wasn't sure if that was from Sargon smacking him down or due to shock. He stared, slack-jawed, at the Nexus thing. More and more goop kept flowing out of the smoking hole in its surface. Walking up to him, I proudly surveyed my weaponeer's work. Claver seemed to be beyond words.
I thought you said they were full of water, I told him. That looks more like snot to me.
Claver turned to me, his face displaying vast disbelief.
You idiots, he said, almost as if he was out of breath. Not since Napoleon fired a cannon at the Sphinx. You have no idea what you've done. You're like children playing with matches unaware the town is burning.
I grabbed him and hauled him to his feet. I gave him a shaking that made him look like a kid's rag doll.
If that's true, I said, it's your own damn fault, not mine. You've been full of crap every word, every step of the way. If you ask me, you're too clever by half for your own good. Now we're marching out of here. You can come with us, or sit in this cactus patch and play with the spiders.
I left him there, and I didn't much care what he did. I'd had enough of Claver and this weird, deadly planet. If we ran into any new menaces, I planned to blast them first and ask philosophical questions later. Eventually, Claver followed us. He walked as if in a dream. Sargon came up to me and voiced his concerns.
Claver seems to be taking this hard, he said.
Yeah, well, he'll get over it.
I mean,
he seems dejected and even a bit nuts.
Glancing back, I could see what Sargon meant. Claver was staring at the ground and talking to it. I figure he's probably overwhelmed by the strain of being alone on planets like this one, I said. Imagine living without the joy of human companionship for so long. Sargon gave me an odd look.
Are you joking, Vet?
Yeah, I thought so.
What if the crap he was spouting is true? What if we just started a new war with these plants? We can't just keep doing that kind of thing without paying the piper eventually.
Listen, I said, don't let Claver get to you. Remember what Turov did? She blasted this planet with Minotaur's broadsides. That flattened an area the size of Connecticut. What difference does one cactus make in comparison to that?
Apparently, Claver had been listening to our talk. He snapped out of his reverie and rushed to catch up to me. He reached for my arm, but I twisted away from him.
What do you want?
I asked dangerously.
That's it, he said.
He was smiling now.
I can blame it all on Turov. That woman is a bigger fool than you could ever be.
I can't argue with that, I said. But what are you on about now? Claver turned and trotted off into the ferns. We'd passed the edge of the spider pod field and now marched through the endless undergrowth of the forest again.
Halt, I said authoritatively.
I drew my sidearm and aimed at Claver's legs. I'll put you down if you take another step. One side benefit of blasting aliens you weren't supposed to was that people tended to take your threats seriously. I'm not sure if I would have shot Claver as he ran off into the forest, but then again, I might have. As it turned out, I didn't have to make that choice. His pace faltered, and then he stopped.
Get your butt back here, I demanded.
What's the point? You're all as good as dead, and me with you if I stick around.
His comment made me eye the wild land around us with fresh concern. Then I turned back to Claver. I took careful aim.
Explain why, and maybe I'll let you go, I said.
He turned around to face me with a calculating look in his eye. I'd seen that look before, and I knew it meant he planned to bamboozle me. That didn't worry me at all, though. Every time I'd met up with Claver, he'd pretty much had the same plan in mind.
All right,
he said, coming back to me. He walked right up to my gun barrel as if he didn't have a care in the world. He might be a liar, a thief, a schemer, and a general scourge on the soul of humanity, but Claver was no coward.
Talk,
I ordered. The rest of the squad halted and gathered around, listening. Some looked amused, some worried, and some were pretending to be bored like Kiwi, but mostly they were interested in what Claver had to say.
The broadsides Turov fired didn't hit any of the Nexus nodes like this one. Her guns knocked out their construction yards. That's where I usually come to do business, to trade metals and other refined goods with the locals.
Okay, then. Tell me this.
Why would shooting a Nexus be a bigger deal than blasting apart a large section of the planet?
Admittedly, destroying a valuable facility from space is an attack, but invading this world and executing a gestating Nexus just as the pods are ripening, that's an entirely different